Let's turn back to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, page 668. What would Solomon, the wealthiest, most successful, cleverest, best educated man in the world of his day, want to say to us? That's what Ecclesiastes is all about. Solomon was the celebrity of his day. He was the man that everybody wanted to be. Everybody envied Solomon. Even the Queen of Sheba, he took her breath away. Looking back on his life, what did he learn? What would he want to say to us? The teacher who wrote Ecclesiastes tells us in Ecclesiastes what Solomon would want to say to us. The teacher may have been Solomon himself towards the end of his life, or he may have been one of the wisdom teachers of Israel who donned Solomon's mantle and said, "Imagine with me that I am Solomon." This is what Solomon would want to say to us. But whatever you think about the authorship of Ecclesiastes, this is what it's about. What would Solomon want to say to us today? Well, we kicked off last week by looking at verse 2, which is the motto of the book. Perhaps a surprising statement. This is what Solomon would want to say to us, verse 2. And it's also at the end of the book, so the book begins and ends with this statement. NIV, meaningless, meaningless, utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. And we looked at that word Abel, which the NIV misleadingly translates meaningless, last week. It means a breath. It means a vapor. It means a puff of air. And it came to be applied to anything that is brief and that is without real substance, that is elusive, that is impossible to get hold of, that is deceptive and disappointing. You can't get hold of vapor. You can't get hold of mist. You can't get hold of smoke. And the teacher describes this word meaningless as a chasing after the wind. Very exhausting. I don't know whether you've ever tried it. I haven't. But I imagine it's pretty exhausting, chasing the wind. And very disappointing, because you don't actually get anything. After all, you're running around chasing the wind, you don't get anything. Gets you nowhere. No matter how hard you try, you end with nothing. That's the message of Ecclesiastes. That's what Solomon would want to say to us. So from the opening motto in verse 2, we move this morning to the opening poem of the book, which is in verses 3 to 11. And this poem is very important. It sets the scene for the whole book. And you can call this poem if you want, and we'll entitle this sermon, "The Treadmill." The Treadmill. You've seen a hamster on a treadmill, haven't you? Every day it goes to the same treadmill and goes round and round and round and round. And every day it thinks, well, this is the greatest thing in the world, going round this treadmill. And you sort of think, well, why is it doing it? What's it actually getting out of it? Why does it bother? Well, this poem is about the human treadmill. And it describes what the teacher calls life under the sun. Verse 3. What does a man gain from all his labour at which he toils under the sun? The words "under the sun" are one of the key phrases of the book of Ecclesiastes. He uses it, I think it's about 23, 25 times. Life under the sun. And he basically means life in this world, without reference to anything beyond this world. God isn't mentioned in this poem. Just life under the sun. What is life under the sun, says Solomon? Well, he describes it in this poem. And verse 3 also introduces us to two other very important words in the book of Ecclesiastes, the word labour and the word toil. You'll find these words over and over again in the book of Ecclesiastes. I think it's something like 17 or 18 times. One of the themes of the book, labour, toil. Now the teacher isn't against work, and he isn't against hard work. In fact, he commends hard work. Look at chapter 2, verse 14. Chapter 2, verse 14. Sorry, it's not chapter 2, verse 14. Anyway, he commends hard work. Chapter 3, verse 13. We'll try that one. That everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil, this is the gift of God. Yes, that one's right. Chapter 5, verse 18. Chapter 5, verse 18. Then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him, for this is his lot. Chapter 8, verse 15. I commend the enjoyment of life because nothing is better for a man under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be glad. Then joy will accompany him in his work all the days of the life God has given him under the sun. Chapter 9, verse 10. 9:10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working nor planning nor knowledge nor wisdom. So he's not against hard work. He actually also warns us against laziness. Look at chapter 10, verse 18. Chapter 10, 18. If a man is lazy, the rafters sag. If his hands are idle, the house leaks. So he's not against hard work. He's against laziness. But he is against workaholism. He's against the kind of person who is driven by his work. Work that is just motivated by envy. Look at chapter 4, verse 4. Chapter 4, verse 4. I saw that all labour and all achievement spring from men's envy of his neighbour. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Or maybe it springs from greed. Look at verse 6 of chapter 4. Chapter 4, verse 6. Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. That's a great verse, isn't it? One handful with tranquility, better than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind. He's not against work. He's against workaholism. He's against the kind of work that is driven by envy of others or wanting people to envy us, or work that is driven by greed, two handfuls rather than one handful. And he's against the kind of workaholic whose devotion to his work means that he misses out on, for instance, relationships, the good relationships of life. Look at chapter 4, verse 7, verse 7 of chapter 4. Again, I saw something meaningless under the sun. There was a man all alone. He had neither son nor brother. There was no end to his toil, yet his eyes were not content with his wealth. For whom am I toiling, he asked? And why am I depriving myself of enjoyment? This too is meaningful. This too is meaningless, a miserable business. So he's against the workaholism that leaves a man, and these days it can just as likely be a woman actually, leaves a man without human relationships. Decent, normal human relationships. Many women today are so obsessed with their career that they miss out on motherhood. A God-given, wonderful human relationship. But work is more important. The career is more important. He's against that sort of stuff. And he's against the workaholism which derives a man not only of good relationships, but derives him or her from sleep. Chapter 5, verse 12. Chapter 5, verse 12. The sleep of a labourer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. So he's not against work, but he's against workaholism. The person who finds his whole significance and purpose in his work. The person who tries to immortalize himself through his work. We're going to die, but maybe I can make a lasting impression. Maybe I can leave something behind that'll last forever. And the whole point of Ecclesiastes is to say, you won't. You won't. It's not worth it. He's got Genesis chapter 3 in mind here. After man's disobedience, springing from man's desire to be like God, a sentence was imposed upon mankind. You find that sentence in Genesis chapter 3. I'm sure you're familiar with it. I'll read it to you. You needn't look it up. Genesis chapter 3. Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat of it all the days of your life. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. That was God's sentence on man who wanted to be God. You're not God, says God. You're not God. You're dust. You came from dust, and you will return to dust. And life since the fall has been labour and toil, which gets us nowhere but the dust. It's a battle with the earth, which the earth always wins. You are dust, and to dust you will return. So much for man's attempt to be like God. So ever since the fall, we've been on a treadmill. We have to labour and toil to stay alive, but in the end, we die, all of us. And Ecclesiastes says this in chapter 3, verse 19. Chapter 3, verse 19, man's fate is like that of the animal. The same fate awaits them both. As one dies, so dies the other. All have the same breath. Man has no advantage over the animal. Everything is meaningless. All go to the same place, all come from dust, and to dust all return. That's the point of Ecclesiastes. If it all ends in death, what's it all about? What do we gain from all our toil? What's it all for? At the end of the day, what are we going to have to show for it all? Absolutely nothing. Verse 3, what does man gain from all his labour at which he toils under the sun? Nothing. Chapter 5, verse 15. Chapter 5, verse 15. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labour that he can carry in his hand. And Paul the Apostle says exactly the same thing in 1 Timothy chapter 6. We brought nothing into this world, and we will take nothing out of this world. We leave this world exactly as we came into it, with nothing. How much did he leave? A man asked the vicar after the funeral of a millionaire. Everything, replied the vicar. And so we strut and fret our brief hour upon the stage. That's Shakespeare. We strut and fret our brief hour upon the stage, and we achieve, at the end of it all, nothing. But we can make a difference to the world. We can make a difference to history. We can make a difference to society. Although what the good of that is, if in the end society is just going to go extinct like the dinosaurs anyway, I'm not sure. But, you know, we can make a difference to society. We can make a difference to the world. We can make a difference to history. Do you really think so? Says Solomon in this poem. Do you really think so? Actually, we don't make much difference to anything. What real difference does anybody make? Verse 4, generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. One generation dies off, the next comes along, young, optimistic, confident, rebellious. We're going to be different. We'll change things. We'll fix everything. Things are going to be different from now on. That generation lives and dies, comes and goes, and the earth remains the same. And it carries on regardless. And even the earth doesn't seem actually to be getting anywhere, says Solomon in this poem. The sun rises and sets. Rises in the east, sets in the west. Next day it does it all over again. And the day after. And so it goes on. And the wind blows to the south and round to the north. And so it goes on round and round and round and round. Going nowhere. And what about the water cycle, which we all learnt about at primary school, didn't we? The water cycle, if I can remember it, it's here in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, there they return again. The streams flow into the sea. The sea evaporates into the clouds. The clouds fall as rain into the rivers. The rivers go back into the sea. And round and round, and round and round it goes. So it's not even just mankind that's on the treadmill. The whole thing is on the treadmill. And it all goes on regardless of us, indifferent to us. And the irony of it is that it will outlast us. The earth, which man was meant to rule, says Solomon, will still be around after man has gone. And it'll be as if we've never been. Reminds me of an old song. There's an old man called the Mississippi. That's the old man I'd like to be. What does he care if the world's got trouble? What does he care if the land ain't free? Old man river, that old man river. He must know something, but he don't say nothing. He just keep rolling. He keeps on rolling along. He don't plant taters. He don't plant cotton. And them that plants them are soon forgotten. But old man river, he just keep rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain. I gets weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living and scared of dying. But old man river, he just keep rolling along. It's all in Ecclesiastes chapter 1. So we make no real difference to the earth at all, says Solomon. And we don't even make any difference to history, really. Each generation thinks it'll be different. But there's no real change. There's no real progress, says Ecclesiastes, verse 9. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new. It was here already long ago. It was here before our time. There's nothing new. The news is the same things happening to different people. Progress, well, there's such a thing as progress, but we're just doing the same things faster, that's all. We're just doing the same things quicker. But there's nothing really new. The advertisers love this word new. Everything is new. We all want something new. So we go for a new house or a new job. We go for a holiday to a new country. We buy the latest new gadget. We decide to get a new spouse. And we think that'll get us off the treadmill. But it never does. We always want something more. And so we pin our hopes on a new politician or a new party or a new movement or a new cause or a new year. Or a new century. Or a new millennium. It'll be different now. But nothing really changes. Nothing really changes. It's boring. The Eurovision Song Contest. Every year, Lithuania will give Latvia 12 points. Cyprus will give Greece 12 points. Nobody will give us any points. the World Cup, we'll lose a penalty shootout. The boat race, it'll be either Oxford or Cambridge, unless one of them sinks. And so it goes on. We try to escape to another world altogether, the world of the soap opera. Maybe that's more interesting than my little life. We watch other people on reality television, selling their homes, designing their gardens, having their operation, living together in a jungle. On Thursday night, there was a whole program, an hour long, about a Frenchman whose hobby is shinning up skyscrapers. He just climbs up the sides of skyscrapers right up to the top. And I thought, well, this looks interesting. I'll watch this. I don't watch much television. I thought, I'll watch this one. A Frenchman who climbs skyscrapers with no ropes, just with his bare hands. If he falls, he dies. That should be interesting. But you know, he's climbed 84 of them now. And one skyscraper is very much the same as another. You know, there was a skyscraper in Moscow, a skyscraper in Peking, a skyscraper in London. And this man's shinning up all these skyscrapers. They could have done it in 10 minutes. It was an hour's program. It was boring. They had to keep interviewing his wife, who said things like, I'm going to support him. After all, he is my husband. Yes, he's nearly 50 now. I don't know what he's going to do when he's too old to climb skyscrapers. What a boring program it was. There is nothing new under the sun. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. So don't throw your old clothes away. They'll come back into fashion. And everybody will think, this is the latest. You were wearing them when you were young. So, we don't really change anything, says Solomon. We're on this treadmill. And it all ends in death. Dust. It's going nowhere. And Solomon, in Ecclesiastes, the early chapters, will proceed to tell us the escape routes he tried in order to get off the treadmill. They all proved to be dead ends. They all let him down. He tries education. That's in the rest of this chapter, chapter 1. He tries education. But philosophers die as well. Scientists can discover all about the treadmill. They might even find out how the treadmill works. But it doesn't get them off the treadmill. They're on it like everybody else. And so from education, chapter 1, he goes into pleasure of all kinds, chapter 2. Entertainment, laughter, wealth, wine, work, huge building projects, music, sex. We'll be looking at it all next week, probably. And he becomes basically a cross between Albert Einstein, Bill Gates, and Hugh Hefner. Hugh Hefner was the founder of Playboy magazine, if you've never heard of him. He's getting on now, so he'll be dying soon. And that's what Solomon became. And in chapter 2, verse 10, he describes it. Look at chapter 2, verse 10. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Verse 11, yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Why, Solomon, when you've done so much and experienced so much, why do you write it all off as meaningless or Abel, vanity, vapor? Well, chapter 2, verse 16. The wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. So even Solomon is going to be forgotten one day. And going back to the poem, verse 11, there is no remembrance of men of old, and even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow. We're just going to be forgotten. Solomon says, we've already forgotten the people of previous generations. The people of future generations will forget us. And the generations after them will forget them. So our destiny is to be forgotten. Okay, so we're going to have a great time on Sunday mornings in Ecclesiastes, aren't we? Remember chapter 12, verse 11, which I brought to you last week? From the conclusion, the words of the wise man are like a goad. What is a goad? It's for prodding animals in the right direction, who are liable to go astray. And it's meant to sting. It's meant to hurt. When you get prodded by a goat, you say, ouch. And I will be prodding you mercilessly over the next few weeks. So that you're all saying, ouch. You see, we don't really like thinking of the sort of things I've been bringing before you this morning. In order to avoid thinking about these things, we go faster and faster and faster around the treadmill. To avoid thinking about the fact that it is a treadmill. We need to be prodded. And we Christians need to be prodding other people all the time. We ought to be prodding people all the time. With Ecclesiastes. We ought to be saying to them, look, okay, if life under the sun is all there is, tell me, please, what it's all about. Tell me what the point of it is. If that's all there is to it. We need to be prodding people in our society today because they don't like this. They don't want to think about this. And we need to prod ourselves as well. Because we don't like to think about it. And of course, as I mentioned to you last week, there is something missing from Ecclesiastes. Jesus is missing from Ecclesiastes. What if there is more to reality than the treadmill? What if there is, as Ecclesiastes in the last chapter tells us that there is, a creator? What if there is a creator? Remember your creator, he says in chapter 12. Remember your creator while you're young. And I'm sorry in a sense that the 11 to 14 year olds aren't with us this morning. I think it's a great idea for them to go out and discuss the sermon. But I'd like them to have heard this one, actually. Remember your Creator while you're young. Why? Well, when you've been on the treadmill for a long, long time, you'll probably never get off. You're so used to being on the treadmill, you'll never think of anything else. You'll be on it for the rest of your life. Get off it while you're young. What if there is a Creator? What if there is a greater than Solomon? There is. His name is Jesus. And what if Jesus is not only greater than Solomon, but greater than Adam, whose sin got us onto the treadmill in the first place? And what if Jesus died our death? Once and for all. And what if he was raised from the dead? That would be something new under the sun, wouldn't it? That would be something really new. That wouldn't be boring. What if Jesus broke out of the treadmill? And what if he can take us with him? Paul says to Timothy that he's destroyed death and brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. He's brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. It's not there in Ecclesiastes. There's nothing much in Ecclesiastes about any hope of life after death. Life and immortality brought to light through the gospel, through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. What if Jesus says, if you believe in me, you have eternal life? What if there is to be a judgment, as Ecclesiastes says right at the end, that every hidden thing will be brought into judgment, whether good or bad? And what if the resurrection of Jesus Christ means that that judgment is certain? God has fixed a day on which he will judge this world in righteousness, and of this he has given assurance to all men by raising Jesus from the dead. The death of Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus makes the judgment absolutely certain. The judge is alive. We haven't seen the last of him. We will face him after death. And therefore everything, every single thing is far from meaningless. It is of eternal significance. And we will be accountable to God for everything we do in this world. What if all that is true? What if the gospel is true? It is true. If there's anyone here who wants to know whether it's true or not, we're hoping to start a new Christianity Explored series very soon. Get signed up for the Christianity Explored series course. Find out whether the gospel is true or not. It is true. And of course the gospel gives us a completely new perspective on everything. If the gospel's true, if God raised Jesus from the dead, if there is to be a judgment, and Jesus is to be the judge, well, Paul says at the end of that great resurrection chapter, 1 Corinthians chapter 15, let us always be abounding in the work of the Lord, for we know that in the Lord our labour is not in vain. Gives you a whole new perspective to the treadmill. In fact, the treadmill ceases to be a treadmill and becomes more like a race, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. And yet we still need Ecclesiastes. Even we New Testament people need Ecclesiastes, because we so easily get back to living as if life under the sun is all there is. And we lose sight of Jesus. We lose sight of the Creator who we're to remember in the days of our youth. And so we constantly need to be prodded with Ecclesiastes. So come back next week and I'll give you another prod.